You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back. It's our now regular visit, I'm very pleased to say, with David Goldman time. It is a chance to pick the brains of a man whose brains are formidable indeed, particularly in matters involving economics and strategy, and he is kind enough to lend some time to us on a regular basis now when he's not writing his column under the pseudonym of Spengler at Asia Times or managing Reorient Group Limited. He is writing feverishly and otherwise contributing to the public policy debate, so we're always grateful for the moments he spares us to walk us through some important developments that he's tracking and that we need to. David Goldman, welcome back. So good to have you as always.
Frank, great pleasure.
Let me ask you first, David, to talk a little bit about Syria. I know you cover Asia intensively, but you're a free-range observer of the very important developments of our time, and certainly what's going down at the moment in Syria would qualify. What is, as you see it, the state of play, point one, and point two, what should we be doing as a country with respect to that state of play?
Well, the state of play is that Russia, Turkey, and Iran are dividing the country amongst them, with support from Iranian irregulars, 80,000 on the ground, and Russian air support. The brutal Assad government has pretty much won the civil war. Turkey is a serious factor. They can make a lot of trouble by supporting various Sunni rebels against Assad. But as long as Assad and Russia give Turkey free rein to mop up the Kurds in the north, the Turks will play ball, and although they've got disagreements, they'll all work together behind our back. Bottom line, Frank, is if we don't have boots on the ground, we don't have any say in there, and the Kurds, the people who defeated ISIS, were supposed to be our boots on the ground, but we've thrown them under the bus in order to appease Turkey, because too many people in Washington are worried that Turkey is going to leave NATO, and that would be a terrible disaster. Fact is, Turkey has already, for intents and purposes, done that. They've worked with Russia and Iran. We have nothing to lose. So the way to respond is go back to supporting the Kurds and have a viable pro-American fighting force in the area. That's where you get a seat at the table.
Yeah. You know, this is a case of, well, one great mind and one not so great mind thinking alike. I think, David, I've been opining of late that we do need to do exactly as you say, plus throw into the mix support Israel as she confronts an increasingly existential threat from this combination of bad actors on the other side of their northern border with Syria, to say nothing of what could rain down on them at any moment from Hezbollah forces arrayed in Lebanon. But to this point, it does seem to me that, as we argue in a new book to which you have contributed, which should be out next week, entitled Turkey Ally No More, that in fact Turkey has, for all intents and purposes, ceased to be a reliable partner for the United States. The question has arisen, they haven't exactly left NATO. They may be betraying it, and there doesn't seem to be any formal vehicle for, you know, removing them from it. What is your advice about that? How do we clean up that particular mess?
Well, the diplomatic procedures for expelling a member from NATO are complex. I wouldn't worry about the diplomatic nicety. I would worry about putting a collar on the neo-Ottoman expansionist Islamic maniac running this place, Recep Tayyip Erdogan. Erdogan has massive economic problems. He has massive demographic problems. The Kurds are having twice as many kids as ethnic Turks. The place is going to be majority Kurdish under the age of 30 in a generation. And what we can do is, first of all, put a squeeze on his finance. That's his Achilles heel, because like a lot of third world dictators who've run the country with a massive credit bubble, the currency has been crashing lately, inflation's out of control. We should limit his room to maneuver by hurting him economically, and we should give the Kurds the ability to fight back against this Turkish invasion of northern Syria. That might involve such things as some handheld anti-aircraft missiles falling off the back of a truck.
This is the Stinger option, which was used to very considerable effect, of course, in Afghanistan by my old boss Ronald Reagan. Not without some blowback, some would argue, but nonetheless, it was quite strategically important on the ground there.
The Kurds are the ones who crushed ISIS. They're tough. They're willing to fight. They don't have the heavy weapons to deal with Turkish aerial bombardment, although they've made shots with the Turkish tanks, because they do have anti-tank weapons. Looking ahead to Iran, which is our biggest strategic headache in the region, the Kurds are the key to regime change in Iran. 10% of the Iranian population are ethnic Kurds, and if we could help them get together with the Kurds of northern Iraq and Syria, that would give us a very powerful lever for regime change, along with other ethnic minorities in Iran, such as the Iranian Arabs and the Balochis in the southeast of the country. And I strongly believe that regime change should be our objective. Their economy is in free fall. They've got demonstrations and riots almost every day. No country perhaps ever was so ripe for regime change as Iran is right now.
Let me ask you, because I'm very sympathetic to this both remedy, as you say, and the way to bring it about by fracturing the country and helping its elements to bring it down, the regime. There are those who would argue if you actually took steps to help the Kurds advance essentially the agenda of an independent Kurdistan made up of not only Iranian Kurds, but those in Turkey, also in Iraq, also in Syria, that you would have brought on essentially a regional war with all of the countries who were being induced to give up those populations and their territory. As a kind of conflict of the first order. What are your thoughts on that, David Goldman?
Probably, eventually, you're going to have a breakup of Iran. There's going to be an independent Kurdistan in the north, which de facto you've had all along. All you need to do is have an oil-sharing arrangement so that the people down in Baghdad don't feel they're being completely cut out, and that's relatively easy to do. The Turks are going to scream their heads off, but they're already in a regional war. They're already in a full-dress invasion, so I don't see what we have to lose there. In the case of the Iranians, we're already in a war with Iran. Iran has 80,000 Revolutionary Guards and assorted mercenaries rampaging through Syria. So we're already in a war. The question is, are we going to fight for our side, or are we going to sit there from the outside and then just throw a few cruise missiles at it? That's always been the objection. It's always been the excuse to do nothing. It's like Churchill said, you know, you've had a choice of shame or war. You chose shame, and now you're getting war too.
Yes, and the war on others' terms, which is perhaps as unhappy a prospect as any. I am impressed, and I think this is really such a key insight that, as you say, David Goldman, the Kurds have been willing to be the boots on the ground. So with the exception of a relatively small number of American special forces who are being deployed to help them, it's fundamentally on them, and it's insane not to be supporting them, it seems to me, especially in light of the behavior of the Turks. David, some are also arguing, I think particularly in the United States military, that it's whatever one thinks of Turkey's role in NATO these days, the facility that we have at Incirlik, the air base there, is of such surpassing importance to our operations in the region that we can't afford to lose the Turks, allowing us to make use of that. And again, your response on that, Cal?
My response is that America looks at the world like a monopoly board. We've got a hotel in Park Place. We've got a hotel in Broadway. We've got the Doha Air Base in Qatar, we've got the Incirlik Air Base in Turkey. Each of them has a constituency with a reasonable case. The question is, what is our objective? What is our strategy? If we're going to stop Iran with Russian backing from becoming the dominant power between the Mediterranean and the Pakistani border, which is what their objective is, then we're going to have to sacrifice some other things. What's more important and what's less important? What we have is a set of constituencies saying, no, my base is important. You can't touch that. You have to look at it from the top and decide what you're going to keep and what you're going to sacrifice. That's playing chess, like the Russians do, as opposed to Monopoly.
Well, I think the Iranians invented the game, if I'm not mistaken, so there's a lot of that going along. David Goldman, just lastly, your thoughts on this attack, apparently, using chemical agents. Are you of the view that it was, in fact, the regime that did it? Do you have a sense of that, or do you subscribe to the opinion of some, and it may even be a growing number, that it's not altogether clear?
Well, Secretary Mattis is exactly right to conduct an investigation. The difficulty is, evidently, the gas used is a mix of chlorine and sarin. They're both easy to manufacture. Various Syrian Islamist rebels have been in possession of both of them in the past. So it's certainly possible that the losers in this new arrangement in Syria, namely the Islamist rebels who were getting shut out, wanted to stir the thing up by running a gas attack. Assad's perfectly capable of it. The man's a monster. On the other hand, he's won, so his motive for using a gas attack right now is kind of difficult to divine. So I think the right thing to do is what Mattis said, which is investigate and ascertain the facts before acting.
It's a little unclear how we're going to do that with the Syrian regime and the Russians now apparently in control of the area that was exposed to this stuff, but we'll be following it closely, as I know will you at Asia Times and elsewhere. David Goldman, thank you so much for walking us through this very, very important part of what I call the war for the free world. And we'll catch up with you again, I hope, next week for updates.